another episode of Forever Bristol City podcast. I guess it was inevitable that we wouldn't follow up the impressive win against West Ham with a stellar performance against the Hornets, because the final score at Ashton Gate, it finished City 1, Watford 1. I have to say, for my part, I thought Watford were one of the more enterprising sides to come to Ashton Gate, and they're undefeated since we beat them on Boxing Day, but there was to be no repeat of that 4-1 victory. I'm delighted to be joined by Ian, Mark and Neil. So, chaps, as we normally do, you first. Mark, 30 seconds as you walked away from Ashton Gate. Happy, middling or what? You first, Mark.
I think at the end of the day, it was a 0.1 against a Watford side that looked like they're going to be challenging for the playoffs, whereas we're not, because they have more quality through the squad. Gave us a lot more problems with their high press and winning runners, with Deddy Bashiru being exceptional in the first half. Wesley, who, like a rock in defence, stopped us from getting through. But we were competitive, but our frustrations are the lack of goals. Okay. We're pretty decent in defence. Tanner, again, outstanding, right of a free. But if we can't score goals, and we have still have the sixth lowest scoring average in the division, we won't be going anywhere. So small progress. Scott Twine had a decent debut, but same frustrations coming out. Need to score goals, otherwise no challenge coming from anywhere.
Okay. Ian, your thoughts?
If there's such a thing as a good 1-1 draw, this was it. I thought Watford were the better side in the first half. I thought we were a bit sluggish, lacked tempo. I mean, Tommy once again lacked service up front. I don't think the 2-10s was working particularly well until we scored. And then we went up a little bit after that. But I don't know what Manning said to him at halftime, but it worked, because the first 20 minutes, 25 minutes of the second half, Watford were hanging on a bit. Then they came back into the game. So overall, I think it was a decent performance, not outstanding. If there's such a good thing as a good home point, that was a good home point, I think.
Okay. Neil, your thoughts on the game?
Well, I always think about FA Cups or whatever, when you have a hard game in the week, when you really put that effort in, mentally and physically, it does take a bit of a toll. I thought first half in particular, very sloppy in our passing, sloppy in our execution. The one thing I take from it is we almost played like an under-12 team that had a new best player on the pitch. You know, every time we were looking to get Twine on the ball, and not always that was the better option.
Mm.
We were trying to force issue, particularly in the first half. Twine, again, looked first half as if he was trying to do too much, forcing the ball. His pass completion first half, not very good at all, but fantastic goal from him. Fantastic
okay. follow-up. We'll come on to that in a minute. Yeah, I mean, the starting lineup, Mark, would you have been tempted to start with Twine on the bench? And Neil's alluded to the fact that the players were a little bit tired. Well, you know, Knight had been rested, although that was through illness. I agree with Neil. I thought we were sluggish for the first 20-odd minutes. Then we got back into it when we got that goal, the equaliser. Then we eased off a bit. We were the better team in the second half. But what did you think of the lineup? It's sort of picking itself at the moment, isn't it?
Yeah, there's no way we're going to leave Scott Twine on the bench, David. So we went for the same formation as we did against West Ham with a 3-4-2-1. That's Scott Twine's best position. He was played out of position at Hull. Fought in the first half, we stood off them and they were just waiting to catch us in the net near the halfway, turn the ball over, and then they were springing Chekhovatse on the left and Asprilla on the right, and carrying a lot of threat without really creating clear cut chances, which was quite strange. And that was a pattern that carried on through the match. Yeah. We were more competitive in the second half because we really blocked up the midfield. And we had, I mean, for the first 15, 20 minutes of the second half, we were well on top, but didn't do anything. So the game ebbed and flowed, but the first half, yeah, we were slow. They were right on top of us. They came out faster. They were more physical, quicker. So they were winning the second ball a lot more easily. And it looked, I thought, like, oh, here comes a beating. But we're very competitive in games, and we do that against the better teams.
Yeah.
When there's, you know, that's a theme this season. We're losing against the crap teams, and we're very competitive against the better ones.
Yeah, that's very true. I have to agree with you there, Mark, as well, that they look nice on the ball, but without ever looking threatening. Now, Ian, a midfield pivot, if that's the right word to use, of James and Williams, Taylor Gardner-Hickman dropping down to the bench. I mean, Williams is in there on merit at the moment. I didn't think he was quite as good as he has been in a couple of games. But what were your thoughts on the lineup? And McCrory, he's getting an hour. That's getting him back to full fitness. So we're starting to see a player that when he can do a full 90 is definitely going to be an asset.
Oh, I think so. And I think he can also play a number of positions, which is handy when you've got a small squad. I mean, my idea would be to play him in a three-man central midfield against Forest, having watched Forest against Blackpool, and it'll be a similar lineup against us, and then watch Forest, the highlights of Forest versus Brentford. One thing Forest can do is attack, and they're two holding midfield players, if you think about it, are both good attacking players, Mangala and Danilo. And Danilo scored a cracking volley yesterday, but they're not great at the back. They're not great defending. They're certainly not great from set pieces, defending set pieces. So it's a real shame that Scott Twine's not playing, because I think he took our set pieces up a level that we haven't seen since Luke Freeman was here.
Totally agree.
So the other side of it, in terms of it didn't come as a great surprise to me, because Joe's suspended against Forest, so I thought he'd play 90 minutes. I thought Taylor Gardner-Hickman might start instead of Matty James, but it worked out okay. I thought Matty had a tidy game. Once we got up to the pace of the game, because in the first half, it was happening around us a little bit. Although, in fairness, over the 90 minutes, neither goalkeeper had a huge amount to do apart from the goals. No. And I mean, theirs was a pen. So when Rob Dickey decided he wanted to start playing volleyball. Okay. So, no great surprises in the lineups, and I think McCrory, when he's fit, is going to be a cracking player.
Yeah, possible captain of the side next season.
It depends. I mean, he's one you can look at and think, well, he'll definitely still be here. I don't see why not.
On the injury front, I mean, we know this week because it was shown on Robin's Uncut, Benarous and. And Rob Atkinson are back on the grass, as they say. What's the situation on Mark Sykes? Because there's got to be some interesting team selections to come to think
Mark,
about.
When Mark Sykes will either be back. If he's not back against Forest, he'll be available for the Coventry game.
All right. And I'll ask you a quick yes or no on this. If fit, is Mark Sykes a definite starter in your 11?
Against Forest, yes.
All right, I'm just talking about in general, you know, against Forest. Yeah,
because we're not scoring goals, and we're still not scoring goals, enough goals, certainly, I'd bring and this is going to be controversial, I'd bring Naki in up front with Tommy. I'd play three in central midfield of Taylor Gardner-Hickman, Joe Williams, Ross McCrory. Sykes would be my wing back.
Yeah.
And I'd leave Jason Knight on the bench to start with.
Okay, interesting. Neil, the Williams-James combo, people say it hasn't got a lot of movement. And then we were playing with sort of like Knight and Twine in behind Conway. I didn't think Knight was all action. I thought he was okay. But, you know, when those players come back, there are some interesting decisions to make, aren't there? As somebody said on the text feed here, you know, what is the best starting lineup and the best formation? But
well, I mean, first off, in particular, what they did last dogs hit. What they did differently to the first game on Boxing Day is about Dele Bashiru in on the start, and him and Kone in midfield. Kone in particular, that no doubt we'll talk about later on. They ran rings around in the first half.
Yeah, you know, first 25 minutes.
There was four. You know, often there'd be four of our midfielders around either Bashiru or Kone the speed, the pace, the movement of them all over the place. So I think in a nutritional game, Williams and James have their uses, but in those sort of games with fast sort of moving midfield, they were exposed a little bit yesterday, particularly first half. I think the question of Sykes for me, obviously first half, we're watching McCrory over from E32, and you know, he's going to be a player, and Aberdeen fans say, oh, his best position is right wing back. But I think Sykes goes in there. Sykes has got 5 goals, 2 assists. Sykes is the guy that gets on, you know, Pring looks like he's back, got his mojo back a little bit without Mometi in front of him. He's got a bit more space to attack and down the wing.
Well, he hasn't got to worry about his defensive duties quite so much, has
absolutely.
He?
Absolutely. And then I think Sykes just adds a certain dynamic into the team. So Sykes, for me, comes into the right wing-back position when he's back. I don't know whether Forrest is going to be the game that he's back, because you'd think he would be on the bench yesterday if he was going to be back and easing back in with a hamstring injury. Like
maybe he does half a game with McCrory instead of Sam Bell, because Sam Bell starts to be the one that gets left out. All right, let's get into that. We'll talk more about the Forrest game later. Let's go. Let's look at the goal as each of us saw it. Unlucky 13, it sort of came out of the blue, Mark, really, didn't it? As Ian said, Rob Dickey sort of, well, wasn't volleyball as such, but, you know, did he need to have his arm up there? Was he unlucky? What did you think of the award of the penalty by referee Andrew Kitchen?
Oh, it was a clear-cut penalty. Didn't see it at the time. I mean, we gave away a free kick about 10 yards, 20 yards side half, about halfway inside our half. So it's crossed into the area, and I watched it just before we went live, and Pring, Dickey, and I think Knight all go up with Wesley Hoot. So there's three players around Hoot, and you know, all looking different ways, and he's got his arm raised as he goes up, doesn't need to have it up there, and hits his arm clearly, and it's a penalty. Mm-hmm. A couple of Watford players put their hands up, Hoot claims the penalty. Nobody else has seen it. And it's a good penalty from Deli Bashiru. He waits for Max to commit himself. Max dives under the ball. He hits it very hard. He hits it just, you know, reasonable height, but with so much power that it's just flown past him. So good penalty. A very soft goal to give away, because I don't think they'd had any shots. I think they had one shot charged down before that. But yeah, he can't have his arm up like that. But like I said, there were three players around Hoot challenging him when the ball came in, so they should have dealt with it. It would have just gone over his head, I think. He wasn't going to connect.
Yeah, no, it wasn't in a danger area. What were your thoughts on the goal, Ian, and the pen? You don't see, I mean, Max has saved the odd pen, but he's got nowhere near the last few I've seen scored against us.
Well, you weren't going to save that penalty with two goalkeepers, Dave. I mean, it was right in the corner and been pretty high up. So, you know, I think by the time, if you're expecting Max O'Leary to save penalties to keep us in games, then we've got the first bit wrong, haven't we? Daft penalty to give away. He had absolutely no need to have his arm up where it was up. I don't know what's happened. He's made a mistake. Players do it, don't they? Mm. Mm. Mm.
Neil, your thoughts on the goal? The ground was quiet. It was sort of like straight to the spot.
I had a clear line of sight, and the referee took up a very good position. Very clear line of sight. And for me, Dickey is off balance and he's falling backwards. And as he's falling backwards, he puts his arms up. And as the others have said, clear pen. Mm. I don't, at the time, I think we're like, oh, was that? Yeah. And then you watch it back later on and you think, you'd be absolutely disgusted if that wasn't given again.
Yeah. You know. And do you think if we had VAR at this level, the referee might have had a second check? You know, just in his own mind, or was he was assertive in his decision? I thought he refereed quite well yesterday.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's one of those, you just have to take it, clear pen, move on.
Yeah, fair enough.
VAR slows it down. They do look at it. Yeah. Even the most clear-cut things, VAR does slow things down.
We had a little stoppage in the first half because it looked like he was having his blood pressure checked in front of the Lansdowne stand, but there was one of his little monitors on the side was obviously playing up. Scott Twine had an early chance after the handball, after the penalty 1-0, dragged his shot wide. Yeah, it was good effort. That maybe should have gone in. But Mark, the goal. Give us the build up to it, because Tommy was involved again, effectively in a one on one and a similar position to what he was against West Ham. But Heyman did well with the first save. Take us through it.
Yeah, Tommy presses and wins the ball off the final defender, opens his body out and hits the ball to the right-hand corner, and Hamer stands up well and saves it with his foot. The ball spins up into the air, and the desire of Scott Twine to run into that bit of space and jump over Jake Livermore, who must be about 5 or 6 inches taller than him, and use him as a stepladder and head it into an empty net was great. You know, that's what you want your players to do. Scrape every sinew to get to those loose balls, you know, be a fox in a box and put it in the net. I mean, he should have scored with one previously, but he should have put his foot through the ball and he scuffed it slightly, but he made up for it there. Great goal. So, yeah, 1-1 and we're back in the game.
Back in the game. Ian, your thoughts on the goal? I mean, some referees would maybe have awarded a free kick against Scott for clambering all over the defender's back, or no?
Defender didn't jump. That was the problem. He just stayed there and tried to block off Twine's run. So Twine had no alternative but to jump. He went for the ball and he got enough on it to get it over the line. And what the keeper was doing afterwards, I don't know. I just thought that was a that was a real Hollywood dive, wasn't it? Because the ball was in the net before he even took off. And he went past the post.
Just saying about that dive there, Ian, you're old enough to remember this, and not sure about Neil and Mark or some of the listeners, but back in the 60s, Liverpool had a goalkeeper called Tommy Lawrence, and he was known as the Flying Pig. Yeah. And I mean, when he went for the ball after it had gone on the net, it gone in the net, and he had half an eye on that post as well, but it just looked comical, that dive, didn't it, really?
we had one that was called that as well, a guy called Andy Leaning. Well, he was. I didn't call him it, but some people used to call him it. But I mean, he had one of the best goalkeeping performances. Here, I'll take you for a stroll down memory lane now. Best goalkeeping performances I ever saw in a City shirt away to Crewe Alexandra, believe it or not. They battered us for 90 minutes. He made about 10 world-class saves, and John Bailey put one in the top
corner. That was a night game up at Greston Road. That was in the 89-90 promotion season, and Bailey...
35 yards.
30 yards, yeah. Tremendous goal. Tremendous goal. Neil, Tommy, he'd have wanted to have put that one away, wouldn't he? You know, and he's looking, you know, he's scored goals in two highly visible games, the two West Ham games, yeah? There's rumblings of, you know, clubs being interested. Brian Tinian said, I had the pleasure of doing the Q&A with him at Senior Reds. And I think he said the club had put two contracts in front of Tommy, and he's not signing either. What did you think of his performance yesterday? And the fact that he was taken off after an hour? Because for me, Naki's come on, not really done a lot. But the goal and Tommy, your thoughts on that?
Well, what Tommy's doing exceptionally well at the moment is anticipating on that last man.
Yeah.
And I think they had a different centre-back combination yesterday to the 4-1. I think they brought Porteous in for the Chilean guy. He was very, very similar to Holt. Mm. Peralta or something. Something like that, anyway, the centre-back. But he anticipated it and he just nicked in front of Porteous again. Mm. And what he's doing at the moment, playing as that last man, I think he's getting better and better on playing at that last man. And I think the general consensus, because there's about 15, 20 of us that's our season ticket block in E32, and I don't like this, taking Tommy off at 60. Mm. I think he's at that stage now where he is leading the line better and better each week, and Wells comes on and we're bringing on a 5'7" guy to lead the line in that sort of situation.
Yeah.
And our joke is always the first possession after Wells comes on, he gives a foul away. Every single time he comes on and pushes over the centre back or whatever like that, and it just slows the ball down a little bit with Wells. It comes into him, and rather than Tommy running the channels, being more mobile, Wells now, I think, without being too harsh, I think his legs have gone a little bit. He hasn't got that initial zip the 5-yard zip that he used to have in relation to it, and it just slows the ball down, and he needs an extra.
He had
touch.
One chance after he came on that was at the near post, which I think the bloke flicked it away for a corner. And you think that's a typical Naki situation?
Yeah, yeah.
Mark, and I'll ask you the same question. Tommy, you know, he's back to his best. You know, look at his goal scoring record. He's scored a few now. But what are your thoughts on him coming off after the hour and the contract situation? There's some sort of people saying on OTIB, you know, is it time to cash in, or will it be in the summer if he won't sign the contract? But what are your thoughts on that, Mark?
Well, if he didn't sign a contract over the summer, then really, what option are you left with but to try and sell him? Otherwise, you're left with a protracted, you would only have one more transfer window. And you're left with a player who could leave the club for nothing. I don't know if we get any compensation if because he's under 23, but that's it. I think he's a player that plays on the shoulder of the last defender, makes some good runs, but you've got to find other ways of getting into the area, perhaps going near post. We don't see enough near post runs and taking the defender there. So you've got to have more to your game to be a top striker in terms of beating defenders as well. So he's got to find other ways to score than just waiting for loose back passes or pressing. So I mean, sometimes yesterday I think that the service was poor. Twine was trying quite a few things, and really he'd only had like one or two training sessions to get up the speed with the players far too early. So wasn't getting a lot of service, but yeah, didn't do enough. When you're the one man, if that's quite difficult, I think really, I mean, if you could, I think you could say, if we wanted to go for the top six and we got a problem with scoring goals, should we go out and get somebody now in a transfer window? I mean, it seems really difficult, but with just those two players who are really two specialist strikers, because I'm not counting Cornick, he just isn't good enough. Who else is there in the club?
Yeah, was he on the bench? Was he?
He was on the bench. Who else is there? So you've got Tommy and Naki Wells, who's about 33, competing for the striker role. Yeah. There isn't anybody else. So we're very thin on the ground. If you wanted to get in the top six, do you go out and get a player in the next 10 days?
Let's talk about that in a minute. Ian, you were at the Senior Reds, and Brian spoke very well, I thought. somebody said on here about your valuation of Tommy. So what did you hear, Ian, what MW said? I don't know whether that's Matt on Three Peeps, but just Tommy in general, you know, I mean, he's got another high-profile game to show his wares against Forest and then Coventry. So he's got two more games to show his stuff. You know, do you think somebody might come in if he maybe grabbed a couple in the next two games? And we might take it if they did. And what price? Just to repeat what you said earlier in the week, because I can't remember.
Well, there were seven scouts down there yesterday watching Tommy. Not anybody else. So normally you get a pile of scouts down there and they're scouting various players, and some are scouting the team. So you'll have somebody at our game yesterday from Forest watching our team and how we play. And, you know, I mean, you go away with a match report, but I'm not sure how meaningful that would be, because two of them are, one's cup tied and the other one's suspended. But yes, the vultures are circling. But it's a question of how much. Now, at the moment, the general consensus is you wouldn't get the money for Tommy that you got for Scotty, because he's just not as good. So I would suggest that City would probably start off by asking now for somewhere between 12 and 15 and perhaps take a bit less. I don't think he's getting the goals at the moment to attract that size of bid. Because
can I just interrupt and ask you a question here, if I may? So you value him at 12 to 15. The market's not buoyant. How does that stack up against Semenyo? As Ben has said on here, is Conway better than Semenyo? before we sold him. And, you know, Semenya was 9.5 million or whatever. Yeah, so...
Yeah, but once again, with Semenya, you're in the summer and you're getting towards the summer and he's getting closer to the end of his contract.
Yeah.
So you've got a decision to make. I totally agree that any player that doesn't sign a contract must be sold. We can't have players that have got a clear value leaving the club for nothing. We've had too much of that over the years. We've overpaid for players, and then they've walked away from the club for nothing. So
Calas and Pham.
Jiju, yeah.
Pham,
Jiju.
Yeah,
so it goes on and on. And with compensation, you know, the sort of compensation we get for Tommy would be about $250,000 if he was out of contract as a homegrown player. So forget that. He's had contracts put in front of him. He hasn't signed them. I think for Tommy's good, he'd be better off signing one of those contracts and getting himself some more money. But get a buyout clause in there.
Yeah.
If he's going well. Because I looked at Tommy and I thought, right, I mean, Bournemouth are linked with every player we've got. And there's good reason for that, because they bought Semenyo, they bought Scott. Could you see Tommy, as he is now, getting in Bournemouth's team?
Hang on, Mark, let me finish.
I couldn't see him getting in their team. The only team I think he'd go to in the Premier League would be somebody like perhaps Burnley. And they're very likely going to be in the Championship next season. I don't think Luton would sign him because he's not their type of striker. If you've nothing against him, but you know they've got the big physical lads up there. So I don't know where he's going to go. Whether he'd go to a top Championship side, Leicester City, because Vardy's packing in, isn't he? He's what is he, 37, 38 now, Jamie Vardy. So it might be something, a move like that, and they definitely pay him a hell of a lot more money than we can.
And I think that's the thing, because you said, Ian, that Scott, his salary increased 12 times. You know, City have probably given Tommy a contract that's increased his salary probably 3 times the first time and 6 times the second time, but he's still probably earning half, while Alex Scott, maybe even less than that, is earning down at Bournemouth. And it's tragic.
Yeah, he won't be earning.
It's tragic that we're a bloody feeder club for them. Mark, let me... You wanted to make a comment there, and then we'll get back to talking about the action yesterday. But what was your comment going to be, Mark, on that?
He doesn't have that sort of explosive game-changing ability that Semenyo and Scott had. Scott's ability to dribble, beat players out of tight spaces, you know, go past players, win free kicks. Semenyo, low centre gravity, great upper body strength, can push the ball inside and outside players. He doesn't have that in his game yet. So he's got limited capabilities in terms of what a Premier team would be looking for, and that's why I don't think he'd attract the bids.
Well, we get a chance to see Semenyo against Liverpool today. I'd be interested to see how he's gone. And again, we're not going to get any benefit of Lloyd Kelly transferring this window because he's out of contract in the summer. But sadly, he's injured at the moment. And Scott, he's going to be playing against Liverpool. And I don't know whether he was in the return fixture that was played a few weeks ago, but obviously Semenyo scored that goal over Anfield before they got beat. Let's get back in to the action, Neil.
May I just say one thing about Tommy?
Go on.
That role at the top of the pitch is a role that Tommy is obviously playing at the moment, and we're all saying we're not scoring enough goals. We're not doing enough in the top half. We're not taking our chances, whatever. Now, it's with regret that I say, if Tommy goes, Tommy goes. But I don't necessarily think that is such a bad thing.
There you go.
In regards to it, I think it's a shame that we can't keep him at the club. But ultimately, if we're on about changing it, and I think Ian's right about one of the things he said about the change in the summer, I think we need to be more dynamic in that position. We need, you know, if Semenyo was still at the club, that's where Semenyo would be playing.
Playing in a Liam Manning team, the way we're playing at the moment, he would be more effective than Tommy, most definitely.
So we've got 31 goals in 28 league games.
That's appalling.
You take out the 3 games, Hull, Middlesbrough,
and Sunderland,
and Watford.
Hull, Middlesbrough, Watford, that's 10.
That's
got 21 in 25 games.
And there is, yeah, okay, a third of our goals for the season have come in three games. You know, ultimately, it's fine margins in this division. You have chances. He's got six goals this season, Tommy. Three of them have been penalties.
And he got two in Rotherham when he came on as a late sub.
Indeed.
So his prolificness.
From open play, I like Tommy.
Yeah.
Tommy is improving in that role, but is he good enough? No.
This
thought's of 15 million. When you look at the goal scorers, and I've just got them up here, and I will very quickly.
No, go on, you say.
Smoditz, Whittaker, Armstrong, Somerville, Jason Rowe at Norwich, Hardy, Connor Chapman, Thomas Asante, Pirro. You know, these are all good players in this division. And if you're putting Tommy up on that pedestal saying he's a £15 million
player...
Well,
that's what Matt Withers said, so that's poppycock then, really,
isn't it? Is he better? No. Is he better than the lot I've just actually said?
No. What about age? Take Pirro, for example. How old's Pirro?
Well, Pirro's gone for money, hasn't he? Pirro's at Leeds, so anybody that's sort of...
He's 24.
Thomas Asante is playing for Salford, wouldn't he, two seasons
ago? Is Tommy Conway as good as Pirro? I don't know. As somebody's rightly picked up on here, Steve Taylor, well spotted... Semenyo at the AFCON. Yes, he is. All right, so there we go. Let's get back into the action, O'Neil.
Yep.
We could have gone in behind at half time because Spreer, I don't know where our defence was then, but Tommy.
No, I saw it.
Go on and take us through it. And you can, Mark and Ian, you can have your comment on this as well.
Now, I think Ian is spot on about Tanner. This is my loving Ian day.
only because you met him and had a coffee with him.
Well, I'll say you best friend. But I think Tanner looks so much more comfortable, doesn't he? He's right centre back rather than right back. He just looks comfortable in that position.
Yeah.
But one thing, saw the ball go into that Rakovic or whatever like that. He was the top scorer in the Danish league. And what Tanner did, he ball watched.
Mm.
And I watched him do it. Long ball in, the guy wins the header. And Tanner is ball watching, and then he wins the header against Viner, and the guy's caught on the wrong side of him. The guy who scored down the Bosnian or Serb, scored against
Zadzi.
Use your spot.
That one.
And then he passed it into Asprilla, and we all thought, here we go. And a bit of a mistouch, but good goalkeeping by Max.
Yeah, because he could have let it go between his legs, but he didn't.
Yeah.
Ian, your thoughts. On the goal, and I'll also ask you something else, but your thoughts on the goal first. Not the goal, that the save and the fact that he had all that space on that left side.
You're talking about the save that Max made? The
save that Max did, yeah.
Well, it's very good goalkeeping. The guy's got enough time to stick in the net three times. So, the way we play is with the three, you've got George Tanner sitting back, if you will, that allows Cam to push on, and Cam pushes right on, and that's a tactic. So, you know, people will say, yeah, well, they get the ball in behind your wing backs, you know. And I thought McCrory played high as well. So when you play like that, people are going to get the ball in behind you every now and then. They just will. The only way to avoid it is go back to an actual back five, which we don't, go back to a back four. So, it's not just going back, just going back slightly to the goals, our lack of goals. You know, Jason Knight has been getting rave notices, but in 35 appearances, he scored four times, and two of those were in the cup against Oxford. So he's got two goals in 34 games, two league goals. That's all. So that's why I said I'd leave him out and bring Naki in, because Jason's playing almost as a second striker. I don't think that's his best position. I think he's a number eight. Mm. So put him back into that central three in a 3-5-2 and bring Naki in and see how it goes with two strikers.
Neil just said about Naki, you know, he's been a little bit ineffective.
He's getting 15 minutes here, 10 minutes there. It is very difficult to come on, get up to speed. sometimes you come on and it all goes right. You know, you score a cut. Look at Tommy at Rotherham. Came on, played out his skin, scored a couple of goals. How many times has that happened? Genuinely, not many.
No, you're right. And the other thing we naturally.
So I think try the two. We've got to score more goals somehow.
Okay.
Now, you can talk all day long about 2 10s or 4 9s or 3 6s, but we've got to start sticking the ball in the net more. And you can try it in a cup game against Forest because no one's expected us to win. They haven't got a great, they're not great defensively, Forest. Just try it. It might just work.
Yeah. All right.
You know, if it doesn't, you go back to what you did before.
Mark, Danny said on here, love Tommy, but if he doesn't, this is on the text feed, if he doesn't score in a game, his overall contribution is minimal, especially as a lone striker. Nowhere near good enough at this point to be a top three championship club, let alone Premier League. But the point about his overall contribution, because Tommy can't really hold the ball up, is that a fair contribution though? So other than the goals, his contribution is minimal, which is picking up on Neil's point, really, that we don't want to lose Tommy, but, you know, he's not scoring prolifically. Your thoughts, Mark?
It's a difficult one because he's been asked to play as a lone striker. Difficult, you know. So you know, you could be contained by two big central defenders. Might be relying on a lot of service. If the game's stretched, then you've got a chance to get played in and work in those pockets of space, which he does well at. But, you know, in tight games, you've got to make things happen. He doesn't do that. So he's got to find other ways to bring himself into the game. And that's what he's failing to do at the moment. And, of course, if you're a striker that isn't scoring a goal after an hour, you bring somebody else. The logical thing is to bring on somebody else, your other striker, to see if he can be effective in that position and replace you. That's the way it is at the moment. So we're just rotating them out of failure, really. I think they're both on a similar level. I think Naki can make things happen. He's got a better shot than Tommy from distance. You know, the way you see him open up his body.
Yeah, he's putting a good one over the bar against West Ham, didn't he?
He does make near post runs. So I think there is an option to start him. The other thing you could do, Mameti's going to start because Twine's cut tied. If Sykes is fit, if you play that 3-4-2-1, you could. Here's one, you know, play Sykes and Mameti behind Naki Wells. That's an option for you because I don't think he'll drop Ross McCrory because I think he's building up. You know, he's building up his fitness and he's imposing himself on games. I think he'll only get sharper.
Yeah, 100% right there. 100%
so yeah,
right.
That's an option.
No, interesting comment there. As Ian said, and you said this before, Ian, valuation. This is about Tommy. Valuation is for the selling club to decide. I can't buy your house what I want if you don't want to sell something. But there we go. Neil, a couple of people commented about Zach Viner. You know, he got a new contract. I don't believe he's on the 18 grand a week that somebody on one of the forums put there, but who knows?
He's not.
No. Anyway, that's not me saying that.
I think he's a benchmark, potentially. Who knows what he's on? I'm not claiming to be in a know with the finances. Go on.
But he was accused of doing some Hollywood passes too many, trying to do the Hollywood along the ground ball. He did a dreadful one late on in the game, straight to one of their players. And with the form that George Tanner is displaying at the moment, and with Rob Atkinson coming back to fitness as well, Amra Crorry and Sykes being available, I mean, Zach starts not to become a first-choice selection, yes or no?
No.
His position's not under threat at all.
I think what Zach brings you is a pace at the back. You need a pace at the back. You haven't got a pace with Dickie. You haven't got a liquid pace with it. In a three, you need Zach in that pace. I think we saw when he missed a couple of games, and I think they went with Naismith in that situation, and Naismith and Dickie, and we didn't have the pace.
Oh, that was like absolutely slow.
But I think with it, it's an interesting dilemma because Rob comes back into it, I think, as a left-sided, and then Dickie
in the middle.
Well, do you find it probably in the middle because he's more...
Where's Dickie then?
right centre back, and then that calls into question Tanner. It's a good position to be in.
Absolutely.
But then what do you do with Naismith?
Well, I don't think Naismith makes a starting lineup when he's fit.
I think Naismith might be.
I'll come to you in a minute, Mark. Mm-hmm. Ian, your thoughts on Zach? I agree with what Neil says that he brings a bit of pace, but you know, is that the only reason to have him in there? And do you agree with my view that even when fit, Naismith now, with everybody coming back, it would seem, he's not an automatic selection, is he?
No, he's not. And I personally, I wouldn't play him necessarily. He can play on the left-hand side of the back three. If you were at the start of the season, you were picking a back three, you'd probably go Atkinson left, Dickey middle, Viner right. That's what I'd do. Rob Dickey had a one game, I think it was a cup game against Norwich on the right-hand side of midfield, and Pearson threw him under the bus and dropped him because he didn't play very well. So I think the role in the middle suits him. I think Atkinson, he isn't quick, but he's certainly quick enough. Big, long, striding player. So you've got those. I mean, then you've got a selection. You've got McCrory, Sykes, Tanner could play the right wing-back role, depending on whether you want to be more defensive or more attacking. So I think we're getting options, providing we don't get a lot more injuries. Cal Naismith, for me, would be a holding midfield player because of his passing range and ability. And if he makes a rick, there's somebody behind him to shut the door. I agree about all of the Hollywood passes. I thought some of his distribution lately has been shocking, Zach. And that was beginning to be a good part of his game. Max as well, we're trying this big diagonal out to the wing backs, and it's not always coming off. So we need to do that less often, but do it better. But we do that because it's no good pumping the ball down the middle because Tommy's not a great aerial threat. I mean, he can head a ball well enough, but it needs to be his height and coming in from across. Yeah. And that's another problem we still got. Our crossing hasn't really improved. Although, as I said, on the set pieces, they've gone up from about a 6 out of 10 to a 9 out of 10 with Scott Twine taking them.
No, he certainly made a difference. Mark, you put your hand up there to raise a point, and we'll just talk about the closing stages of the game to begin with you. But
With Zach, I mean, he too often tries to force a pass. So he basically gives the ball straight to their midfielders. In the second half yesterday, Chakavatsi, he played one straight to him. He's better just playing a short pass to a midfielder. What we haven't mentioned, and you probably all noticed this, because we were having problems with their high press in the second half, and especially in the first 20 minutes, we got a lot of mileage out of playing the ball behind their defence. So we knew they were playing that, the players were playing quite high. So we played the ball, especially down the right channel. We played an arced ball behind, and I mean, Knight was getting the ball, but he was one-on-one with Hoot, and getting nothing out of him. He stood up really well. Couldn't beat him for love or money to get crosses in. He took too many touches. But we didn't get the bodies in the box to follow Knight, you know. So it was a profitable ball, playing the ball behind the defence to bring the team up, but we didn't get enough bodies to take advantage of it, and we couldn't get past Wesley Hoot, unfortunately. So that was something that we can do, you know, transition by playing a quicker pass behind. Don't try and play through their press and lose the ball.
Yeah, somebody said it was me that said Tommy was worth 15 million last week. That's a person. It's a person with their name's not there. I'm just wondering who that is, whether that's somebody picking me up on me name checking them. Sticking with you, Mark, we had chances to win in the closing stage. I mean, Max did a smart save from, was it Jamal Lewis? It was straight at Max. It went canning in into his chest. And I remember that goal. Remember that goalkeeper, Tom Heaton, that we had for a period before we went on to bigger and better things. Yeah. My weakness with Heaton was that the ball always used to bounce off his chest in that season he was with us. But do you think in the closing stages we had enough chances to win? Because the ball was pinging around in their box, and the flying pig, who was on loan with us a few years ago, he made a couple of decent saves, you would say.
Yeah, Ben Hamer. I mean, they were close to him. He wasn't really stretched, unfortunately. So he had a header from Dickie that was straight down the middle, and then there was one where the ball was. I mean, oh, Scott Twine's corners, excellent.
Oh,
you know how many shots? Virtually all our shots on target came from Scott Twine corners and free kicks. Terrific, terrific pace and trajectory. So we had a long range header from Knight, which was into the ground. Really needed Viner flicking it on. Then there was a header which he pushed out right near the end, and then Naki Wells hooked it back in with his right foot across the goal. There was another header from Pring, and I think Livermore kicked it off the line. But I mean, they weren't in the corner, unfortunately. It just wouldn't go in. It's difficult from there. You know, it's a first touch. Players aren't steadying a shot, so you have to get it right in a millisecond.
Yeah.
So close, but no cigar, unfortunately.
Yeah. I think it gives evidence of Ian saying, if you can have a good 1-1 draw, that was it, because
we finished strongly. I think that was the good thing.
Would you agree with that, Neil, that we finished
yeah,
strong?
I thought Martins, when he came on at half time on the right for Watford, was very good.
Mm.
Gave us a lot of problems in the second half on the right hand side. Very, very good. The delivery is there from Twine. I mean, my issue with Twine, and you and Ian were obviously at the senior Reds, and I think Tinian alluded to the fact that Burnley wouldn't shift from their valuation.
There is no option to buy.
Right.
They wouldn't shift from their valuation. And the other thing, if Twine, I said to Brian, I said, if Twine does well then, between now and the end of the season, the value could go up. And he said, yes.
So
because he'll be in the shop window for a club that might want to pay that 5 million, which is the same as people saying, "Oh, we don't want to develop other clubs' players by the loan market."
So I'm not sure about sort of developing Twine. We're not going to be developing Twine for a Premiership club in a Championship. But ultimately, the way we're setting up at the moment, if for the last, where are we now? 18 games of the season, we're putting all of our emphasis on Twine. And every ball trying to look for Twine, and then Twine set pieces. And Twine, what do we do in the summer? Do we turn around and when Twine isn't there, we have to have another reset, don't we? In relation to it. Mm-hmm. So I think if Twine comes into the team and raises the level of a number of the other players in the team, or we play better, other players play better. But at the moment, everything's going through Twine. So I think against a better team now, another team will look at that. And just going back to Eliasson, do you remember the days of Eliasson when the only guy that could create anything in a team was Eliasson? And so he got double teamed or treble teamed.
Yeah.
So we're going to be playing sides who just go, take Twine out of the occasion. They're going to look every time. They're going to look for Twine, look for Twine, look for Twine, double team and treble team and whatever we need to do, stop Twine and he stopped the team. Mm. So there's that balance to be struck. Mm. And I think in the first half, we were getting the ball 30 yards from goal and we were looking at, where's Scott? Where's Twine? Where's Scott? Where's Twine?
Mm.
And it was like, come on, just play your natural game. And if Twine comes into the situation, then Twine comes into the situation.
Mm. Mm.
But as I say, it was like an under-12 game first half, because it was like, give the ball to the best, whether he was the right player for the right situation or not.
All right, Ian, do you agree with that view? And Twine, you know, Burnley playing hardball, even if they drop his valuation by, would we pay 4 million for him in the summer?
The thing you've got to look at is, how well is he going to play? If between now and the end of the season he scores 10 goals and gets 10 assists, they cheerfully pay 5 million for him. If Burnley could ask for more, but if he does that between now and the end of the season, we might get in the playoffs and we might get in the Premier League. So there's loads of things that might happen. Conversely, if it don't go very well for him, we haven't agreed to pay 5 million quid for somebody we won't want.
No.
So, I mean, there's two things. There's an obligation to buy where the fee's agreed, which we had that deal sorted out with Taylor Gardner-Hickman. He was joining us at the end of the season, providing we paid what we'd agreed with West Brom. And the fact that Andy Byman went the other way, meant we got him for almost half. So there's that question. So we have got options. We got the option to say to Burnley, okay, well, he's done well for us. Scott Twine wants to stay in Bristol. He likes it. He's a Swindon lad. So he's not far from where he was born. He's probably still got family there or whatever. The great thing is that he wants to be here. So if he does well, it could be well worth parting with that kind of money, and we'll be in a better position to do that in the summer, particularly if we sell somebody. If he doesn't play well, then we don't need to sign him. We need to find another way or a better way. So it is those options. And Liam Manning strikes me as a young man who knows exactly what he wants to do and exactly what he wants to get. And he's striving for that. But he can't do unlimited business in this window, to put it right, because clubs do not want to lose players in this window, because they know it's difficult to replace them. So I would say to everybody, just calm down and just see how it pans out.
Okay, Mark. As Tomo pointed out to me in a WhatsApp message earlier this morning, Liam's had 13 league games, which is not quite a third of the season, 16 points. We've got 18 games to go. We're sat there on 37, 2 points a game, 36. That would put us on 73. I mean, unless we win a little group of three games coming up in the league, let's say we need to win two out of the next three, it starts to become a bit of a tall order. We're 6 and 8 points behind sixth and fifth, respectively, in the league. Success this season now is starting to look like being in the top 10. Would you agree with that? With over a third?
Yeah, and that would have been the same at the start of the season. And I think having replaced a manager, logical thing for me has always been we've had to go backwards to go forwards in a way, because the new manager, new head coach has wanted to impose a different style, which is possession based. But the problem we got, and I'll bang on about this, is scoring goals. We haven't solved that problem. And when Neil mentioned it, you take out the Middlesbrough, Hull and Watford, and 21 in 25 games. That is really poor for the Championship, but it's not unusual for us. We really need to score 20 more goals to be effective. We're joint fifth for conceding goals. We got one end right, but not the other. So if like I said, and I mentioned this earlier in the pod, if the club really want to go for it, could they get another striker in? I don't think that's going to happen.
No.
I'm just saying, hypothetically, if they wanted to really go for it, like a Hull City, who have really gone for it.
Well, Carvalho showed his value with the winner at Sunderland, didn't it?
Liam Delap, they brought lots of players in. But we brought Scott Twine in because he's a better player than we got. He's got a burning desire to prove himself in the Championship, because his season was interrupted last season when he was bought for $4 million from MK Dons by Burnley. He started off the season, had a bad injury and didn't come back until December. So he's going to want to prove himself. And he can create goals, great at set pieces, and he can score goals himself. Mm. But we got to start scoring goals, and the match is coming up. Coventry, Leeds, Southampton are all very difficult, but they will each of them give us some chances.
Yeah.
So if we can stay in games and edge them, but we're going to,
you can win again. I mean, the game against Leeds is going to be very interesting, but obviously Coventry before that, so it is.
Leeds and Southampton are better, both better teams than Watford on paper. So we're going to have to add more quality in the final third. But I mean, we had 15 touches in their area yesterday. I mean, that's a good thing and a bad thing. We're getting those touches, but not scoring goals. If we weren't creating opportunities, we'd be moaning about it.
We're not scoring goals. This is the bloody problem.
I think Manning himself, if you look at what Manning did at Oxford, when he went in there, and then that summer, last summer, he got rid of about 12, 13 players. I think ultimately we're all sitting here now, and for the last two or three seasons, we've said City don't score enough goals. We don't create enough. We don't. So what are you going to have to do? What are you going to you're going to have to be brave in the summer, aren't you? Realistically. So for me, I don't see any of the players that are out of contract getting contracts. And I know Joe Williams is playing better and all the rest of it, but at the end of the day, you've got to break some eggs, haven't you?
Yes, you have.
And you've got to shake it up a little bit with Andon Club. And there's going to be a load of players like the Naismiths, the Cornicks.
Mometi even?
Potentially, who knows? But ultimately, you've got to shake it up. You've got to bring it in, because where are we going as a club?
No, I know.
This is eight seasons we've been in this.
No,
in
this league. Is 10. It's 10.
Is it 10 now?
Yeah.
God, this is season 10.
Yeah. Yeah, you missed two.
In fact, is this 11? Is this season? No, this is
No, it's 10.
It's 10.
Yeah. But either way, since we've come back and after Cotterill's promotion, we haven't been in the playoffs. We're poodling around. Ultimately, there's no point, Einstein thing, what is madness? Doing the same thing over and over again and expecting different results. But putting that team out that we put out yesterday, is that going to, however we tinker it, we got through the game yesterday, 75 minutes, we've done three subs. I'm looking at the bench and I'm thinking, who can we bring on to actually change that game?
True.
Nobody we can put on to actually change that game, I think.
Yeah.
And then Manning himself, you're looking at it and you're thinking, well, he's not going to change the formation because you're 1-1. If you change the formation, you go for it and you lose the game. And his dynamic is very much, if it's 1-1, let's make sure we don't lose the game, which is why he didn't change the formation. And probably why he direct swaps the whole time. Direct swaps, direct swaps. But he's got to do something different.
All right. Ian, what do you think on what Neil's saying? I mean, look, there was 23,600 there yesterday. I think it was 2.5 from Watford. So, again, circa 7,000 people bothered to pay on the day to come and watch a mid-table team that can't score, right? Should we go for it? Should Liam be more bold with his substitutions, shake it up a bit? And, what are your thoughts on that and what Neil's just said?
Well, I think there's an element of truth in all of it. You know, we haven't got a strong squad. Two reasons, injuries, and it's a small squad. And that hasn't changed. That didn't suddenly change the day Liam Manning walked in the door. We haven't scored goals regularly since the WSM broke up. And they had to create a lot of those themselves.
They did.
So since that broke up, I think we scored 70-odd goals that season. We scored about 50-odd. And that's where we are. So in terms of being brave, yeah, I think we could go two up top. That's a brave step, but it's not suicidally brave. It's not like saying, well, yeah, we'll go all out and we'll play three central strikers and a winger each side. So you could do that. And I think that's what we're going to need to do to get the goals, unless the two tens really start working. And like I've said, Knight isn't a massive goal scorer, and neither is Scott Twine. I mean, I think he got three goals in four assists or four goals in three assists.
He had one season. I can't remember what it was.
I'm not about what he did at MK Dons. On about Hull, what he's done this season. So,
I think he's got four goals there this season.
Yeah, it was either four goals in three assists and assists in four. I can't remember. But anyway, he's not going to get a massive amount of goals. Tommy's got eight, including what, two pens now? If he scores a goal a game to the end of the season, then the bids are going to start flying in. But I think we definitely need to find a way to score more goals, however we do it. And my first idea, the simplest, would be to play with two strikers. And then you can always, you will have better players on the bench who can come in and make an impact if someone gets injured or if you're chasing a game and you want to make substitutions. That's my side of it.
Okay. Look, need to wrap up in a minute. Yesterday was celebrating Mark the 30th anniversary of the win against Liverpool. As somebody put, Christ, we're celebrating a win in the fourth round of the Cup. You know, that shows the sum total of our achievements as a football club. But it was good to see Keith Welsh out there, and Russell Osman making a welcome return to Ashton Gate, although reading social media, not too many people seem that pleased to see him. But I think we were all there, or certainly three of us. You were probably there, Ian. I don't know about you. All four of us.
Yeah, I was there. Jan.
What are your recollections of that trilogy of games, which were 30 years ago this week?
Yeah, I mean, the first one, obviously, people remember it because the floodlights went, and I think, I don't know who was the manager, but there was a story that he went into his local pub and they switched the lights off to play a joke on him. So we had to play the game again, didn't we? And we had some crap players in those days, you know, the Glenn Penny Fathers and Dave Martins, but they managed, you know, to pull it together for those two games to play above themselves. And really, City should have won the game at Anfield much more comfortably. Bruce Grobbelaar should have got sent off for handing the ball outside the box with Junior Bent. Junior, again, decided to give the ball to, row 10 in the cop with his lovely one-on-one finishing. But my memory of the night was not just the strong winds, but we were obviously in the away end, and I had the wall behind me, and I jumped up and down on my seat when we scored, and both feet went down the back, and I was stuck there for 2 minutes while my mate popped a rib and was laughing his ass off. So that was my memory. But yesterday's celebrations, very quickly, on OTIB, some fans have said, it was a tin pot thing. And what you said, referring to a victory 30 years ago, it's because we haven't had anything to shout about. We touched on this before. That's why we celebrate that. And the bigger one is Leeds, on which is the 19th of February, 74.
Coming up, absolutely.
Because they had 29 games unbeaten. Remember, we beat Liverpool at Anfield. We beat them in the cup.
And he got sacked the next day.
He got sacked the next day. It's a big thing. Yeah. So that's why we celebrate it. We haven't done much in between.
Barry and Ava, Russell was the manager. I do know that. Neil, your comments on that day.
And then I've got a scoop, I'll say. The thing for me that I always take is that floodlight failure in the first game at 1-1. And then blimmin' Les Q made everybody pay again for the next game. You know, normally you'd say, right, everybody who went, tickets are still valid for the second game, keep your tickets or whatever, and then we'll do it in. He made us pay twice, didn't he?
Well, that's the same as you go back, and that there's a thing. When did the lights go out? Beyond the hour?
It's about 75.
No, you have to pay. Because I was there back in 1976 when we played Leeds. I was walking across Greville Smythe Park, and you couldn't see either end of the goals there.
The fog, when Chris Garland supposedly scored, didn't he? That was his debut, wasn't it?
Yeah, 36,000 people in Ashton Gate, and you couldn't see, the Dolman Stand was there then, you couldn't see the other side of the pitch, 36,000, and then the rearranged fixture was in that trilogy of games that took place right at the end of the season when Chris Garland scored the winner and won 1-0. But Neil's going to leave us, so I'm just going to alter the screen format there for those that are watching. There we go. We're back here. Ian, what are your memories? You were a young man back then, and as I was, 30 years ago.
Yeah. Brilliant day out. Went up with a lot of my old friends that I've been going with for years. Spent a lot of time in the Liverpool pubs and all the rest of it, having a crack with some great people out there before the game. I can remember Souness getting fired. I wish Souness got fired.
Souness, the midfielder, or Richie Souness, the Prime Minister.
Souness got fired the next game. I remember the cops staying behind and clapping us off. I remember that. Massive following. We had, I think, all behind the goal and all one side. I think it was 8,000 or 9,000 up there. Yeah. Great day out. One of my all-time favourites, along with the Coventry game that we drew to stay up. And it is true what people say. Yeah, we haven't got a great deal to be to have a stroll down memory lane and be super proud of or whatever, but you know, we are what we are. And it was nice seeing all those people back on the pitch. It's just nice to be able to do it, because I was talking to Neil Palmer and he said we were going to do something with Leeds for the Leeds game. And the Leeds guy said, there's only four of our team left alive and they're not in the best of health.
No.
So
that's 50 years. It's ago. Good. It's 50 years ago next month.
Yeah. Yeah. So at least we've got, and we've got, thank God for Neil, we've got the former Players Association where players are down and they're respected for what they've done. It was great to see the chief. Yes, he didn't look as though he'd aged, Wayne Allison. So great to see him there.
Mark Shale still looks like he could play a game of football as well, didn't
yeah,
he?
Yeah, and Keith was there. Yeah. Keith Welsh, he's had a lot of health problems.
He has had a lot of health problems.
He's a lovely guy. Keith yeah. Welsh is a lovely yeah. fella.
Yeah. But, no, you know, people call it Tim Pot. It was a genuine celebration of something really good that happened. Okay, it was 30 years ago. So what? People, there's a big statue of John Attio outside. What was he playing? 60, 70 years ago?
Yeah.
Who cares? That's part of the history of the club. And yeah. if you don't like that, well, all right, fine.
I think the thing is, you're not going to celebrate in the same way winning the JPT or anything like that. And it was big of its time, as will the Man United win from 2017 be. That'll be right.
Yeah.
Right up there.
Yeah. And it's things where we've had a brilliant night. And there haven't been, you know, over the years, and you've been going as long as I have, Dave, there haven't been that many brilliant nights. Okay. Gate.
All right. Well, look, let's wrap up. One thing I've got to say is if you're listening to us on Podbean, and I think it's about one in five listen to the podcast on Podbean, we are migrating to a new platform, should be happening this week, because we have been invited to be part of the TalkSport Fans Network. Yeah. So we are now going to be, sadly, we're going to have an ad at the beginning, the middle, and at the end, but that's the way it goes. So we're going to be, Forever Bristol City podcast is going to be part of the TalkSport Fans Network. I know some people don't like TalkSport, but, you know, it's good stuff. I've got the guys at Watford to thank for that, because one of them presents on TalkSport 2, a Thursday night show. I think it's about 6 o'clock. So that's good to be doing that. But if you're listening or watching or listening on Podbean, it's probably not going to be, you're not going to be able to do that going forward, because Acast and Podbean are, you know, they're mutually exclusive, I believe. So please make that change. It's on, we'll be on Spotify and Google and Apple Podcasts, all the usual ones. But we're looking forward to Friday night's game against Forest. Rather stupidly, I didn't book my parking space on Just Park. So Melanie will be dropping me off before the game, and very kind of her to pick me up afterwards. So that's good. Ian, final word from you. Do you think we got a chance against Forest. Do you think we do it? Yes or no?
Yeah.
Sorry?
You said yes or no. I said yes.
You said yes. I didn't hear that.
Look, it depends which team turns up, but which City team turns up. But yeah, why not? But we've got to play attacking and we've got to score goals, because we ain't going to beat them by scoring one goal.
All right. Mark, do you think we can do it?
Yes. Yes. In the fifth round, then through to the quarterfinals for the first time in 50 years. So why not?
Okay. And another
let's
thing,
give it a go.
Ian, yes or no? I know you have your sources, so we're not going to ask you to disclose those. Do you think between now and the end of the window, I'd say Friday, how many additions to the team do you think there will be, and how many might leave? Just two numbers.
Are you talking about senior players?
Senior. Yeah, because I know there's this lad from Aldershot that's being linked with us, but how many players of first-team readiness in and out?
Just Stokes is signed, and he's gone back to Aldershot on loan for the rest of the season. Okay. So he's an attacking midfield player.
But two numbers, in and out.
Senior players, one in one. The player I've been talking about is 70%. The hold-up is his club don't want to sell, but I think they will. So that could be one that happens deadline day, which is unusual for us, but that could be one. If that player doesn't come in, there are players who at the start of the window we thought may be available and we made inquiries about, but not for perms, for loans. Now, there was a lad who's at Wolves who was linked, and he is one of those players that we could go for as a loan player until the end of the summer, when this the lad that we want to sign now will 100% be available and wants to come to the club.
Okay. All right.
So if that makes sense to everybody, but you know, I've had people on X say to me, well, why don't we get these things done quicker? Well, when you've got lots of different people involved, so you might have a player going out and a player coming in, and they've both got agents and they've both got families, and then you've got two clubs, they're involved. And it's you know, Brian Tinian isn't sat in his office thinking, well, I'm going to really drag this one out, I think. He wants the bloke here. He wants the bloke here yesterday. So yeah. I'm you know, the lad from Aldershot is a bit like Adam Murphy, who at the moment is doing a pre-season type training with us because the season stopped in Ireland 2 months ago. Mm. So he'll be, along with him, he'll be fast-tracked via the under-21s into the first-team squad. And let's see how they go. But, I mean, the lad at Aldershot was very, very sought after. A lot of interest in him. Ipswich, Norwich, Derby County. Lots of interest in him.
Well, he promised. And I mean, we're doing well.
And that's what we've got to go for. Because, as Brian said during the Q&A, when the question was asked, what are we? Why can't we hang on to our best players? And Brian Tinian didn't explain why. You know, the player, first of all, the player wants to go because the money's massive. You imagine being in a job and somebody comes up to you tomorrow and that offers you 10 to 12 times what you're on. You ain't going to say no. Just quick one for Ali who's coming here, striker from Wimbledon, no. But possibly in the summer.
Yeah, that's we know who that is as well.
Unless, that's the other thing with the transfer window, it can all change in a phone call.
Of course it can.
So if Tommy went, then that might be
might happen. Mark, that was Ian giving an answer to the question. Two numbers, number in, number out. What do you think might happen? Do you think it might be? I guess the key thing is who might leave. You know, would you think maybe a Cornick might leave?
Yeah, I think Cornick might go out on loan. And if there's an agreement there, and I think a midfield player, attacking midfield player, or what you want to call it, will come in either permanently or on loan, depending on which way the cards fall. And that's the thing. Remember last transfer deadline day when we probably dodged a bullet. We were looking at Jack Curry of Wimbledon, and I think they upped the we agreed a fee, and they upped it something like 400,000 or 600,000, stupid money, to get him to go out after telling him to his face that he could leave the club on deadline day. They reneged on that, but we probably dodged a bullet there. The way things have turned out, we just don't know. I mean, it's about, somebody said on here on the chat, it's like a chain, isn't it? In a housing chain, somebody at the bottom, one club's got to wait for a player to move before they can buy. It's just the way of the world.
Yeah, it is. Well, let's wait and see what happens. Exciting game ahead on Friday against Forest. We'll record our match review of that on Saturday morning at 9 o'clock, and then the following week it's Leeds at home. So again, we'll be doing that on Saturday morning.
Don't forget Coventry, Dave.
So Coventry away. Sorry. Yeah, that's on the Tuesday night. We'll be doing that on the Wednesday morning at 9. So all these early morning starts here. I mean, basically, if it's away, we've got to be doing it at 6 in the evening. And if it's at home, it's the day after, basically. That's it. Good to see Sam Pearson get a brace for his new club, Yeovil, yesterday. They're going
to
come.
Good luck to the kid.
Yeah, he's done really well. But look, everybody, thanks for listening. Thanks for your comments, everyone on the side, on the text feed, and we look forward to speaking to you, addressing you all next Saturday morning. Thanks a lot for listening to Forever Bristol City Podcast. All the best. Goodbye.
Thanks, all the best, everybody. Have a great week.
Cheers.
Take care. Really, I ain't got a thing. There's a time I always feel happy as a king when the red robin comes bob, bob, bobbing along.
along. There'll be no more sobbing when he starts throbbing his old sweet song. Oh, wake up, you sleepyhead. Get up, get up, get out of bed. Cheer up, cheer up, the sun is red. Live, love, laugh and be happy. What if I've been blue? Now I'm walking through fields of flowers. Rain may glisten, but still I listen for hours and hours. I'm just a kid again, doing what I did again, singing a song. When red robins are bobbing along. Red robin come bobbing along, along. There'll be no more sobbing when he starts robbing his old sweet song. Oh, wake up, you sleepyhead. Get up, get up, get out of bed. Cheer up, the sun is red. Live, love, laugh and be happy. What if I've been blue? Now I'm walking through fields of flowers. Rain may glisten, but still I listen for hours and hours. I'm just a kid again, doing what I did again, singing a song. When the red robin starts bobbing along.